Okay, everyone, welcome back to our sixth Tefillah Fundamental Shiur. I mentioned last week at the end, after speaking for Kavana for a couple of weeks, that sometimes it feels that Hashem isn't really answering our tefillahs, to put it very bluntly. And maybe that's why it's hard for us to have Kavana. Do we really feel like we're accomplishing something? At this point, it's been very close to 10 years. When I was learning in Eretz Yisrael, my parents were very generous, and they're here, so that's one reason why I'm saying that. But also, they're very generous and very machshev Torah, and they sent me to learn for a year in Israel. And at the end of the first year, I started to push to be able to go back for a second year. And that wasn't their mahalach in the past, but they were willing to let me convince them to go back for a second year. But they compromised on doing a half a year until January, and I was very appreciative. Well, as January got closer and closer in my second year, I started to push the envelope a little bit and to say, well, maybe I could push for a little bit more. So I remember calling my parents from Israel so many times to ask them what they thought, if it's possible to keep pushing and pushing. Maybe I could finish out the year. I'm already there. And my parents listened. They gave me a lot of attention. They let me really speak it out in different ways. And their decision was no. But I kept asking. I kept asking in different ways. And I remember still that after asking, maybe it was 515 times. I don't know. But I asked my father one more time, and he said to me, listen, we have two famous examples of people in the Torah who daven for something incessantly until they realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not going to grant it, and they stopped. We have Moshe Rabbeinu davening to go to Eretz Yisrael, and Avram Avinu davening to Hashem to spare the cities of Sodom and those around it. The difference is that Moshe Rabbeinu kept davening and davening until Hashem said to him, stop davening. It's enough. Whereas Avram Avinu on his own, he went down from 50 to 45 and to 40, and in the end Avram on his own realized to stop davening. So my father said to me, do you want to be like Moshe Rabbeinu and have me tell you to stop asking? Or be like Avram Avinu and realize on your own? It was a great line, and my father's camera's turned off, or he doesn't have a camera on his computer, but I know he's shepping nachas from behind the screen. So it's a good point that there are examples in the Torah of great people who daven for something so passionately, and in the end were not answered. And in a way, it's kind of comforting to know that people like Moshe Rabbeinu and Avram Avinu themselves tried so hard to daven so incessantly for something until they realized to stop. Now, it's not just us. Even people greater than us have found that tefillos have not been answered. But for us, it's so frustrating when we daven for something and we're so passionate about something that we want that's good, or to, God forbid, Hashem should remove something that's bothering us, that's plaguing us. And it's just very frustrating. But yet we see from the Torah that not only is this something that exists for everybody, perhaps there's even a critical reality that this is so. In source number two, Chazal discussed the source for the tefillos, and perhaps the famous idea that the tefillos are patterned after the avos, that each of the avos were mesaking, established one of the tefillos. And the Gemara says, Avram Avinu was mesaking tefillah shachris in source number two. Now, what's the source? Where do we see Avram Avinu davened? And the Gemara is discussing the prayer that Avram davened for the people of Sodom. That prayer which was unanswered. The unsuccessful, the failure, you could argue, Avram Avinu's failed tefillah is the source of tefillah davening shachris. So apparently it's not just a once-in-a-while kind of thing. It's integral. There is, built into the system, the reality that sometimes tefillos are not going to be answered. But the challenge we have is how to relate to it. What is the significance of a tefillah that's not going to be answered? How should we feel after davening again and again, and Hashem does not seem to be answering? Another way to say it, look in source number three, the Gemara says, what should a person do if they're davening and they're not being answered? Gemara says, try again. Keep davening. So, in a way, isn't that a chutzpah? Hashem is basically not saying yes. So, why should we keep davening? Why is it fair for us to keep asking for the same thing over and over again? At some point, it's enough. So those are the questions I'd like to deal with tonight. We're talking about a topic like this. There's not going to be a clear-cut halacha lemaisa because this is a hashkafic question, a very important, very practical hashkafic question, because it affects how we feel. It affects our motivation to keep davening and perhaps giving up to daven or wondering if it's all worth it. I'd like to suggest three different takeaways, three ways to have perspective on what we should feel when we daven for something and perhaps we don't feel like we're being answered. So in section two, perhaps we are doing something wrong. Perhaps the way that we daven, we are putting out a type of tefillah that is just setting us up to be disappointed. Let's go back to another biblical story, a very important example of tefillah. Bnei Yisrael were trapped between the Yam Suf on one side and the charging Egyptians, their old taskmasters, on the other side. And they stood there, and in great pain and great Eis Tzara, they called out to Hashem to help them. And we saw a couple weeks ago, that was great. Tefillah Be'Eis Tzara is the best kind of tefillah. Hashem is giving us a message, and they got it. They looked up to Hashem and they davened. And if you look at source number 4, Hashem tells Moshe at this point, Ma Tetzak Eli, what's everyone davening for? Dabar El Bnei Yisrael V'Yisav, just keep walking, walk into the water, it's going to be okay. Ma Tetzak Eli? Hashem is saying, why are you davening? I don't know, they went to school. And their rebbes and their morris taught them, when you're in Eis Tzara, you're supposed to call out to Hashem. What does Hashem mean? Why are you davening? Ma Tetzak Eli? What else should they be doing at a time like this? Seems strange that tefillah was not the correct approach. So many years ago, I heard an approach in the name of the Tenka Rav. I don't know much about the Tenka Rav. He passed away in the year 2000. He was a Rav originally in Tenka, which is in Hungary, and then relocated the Hasidus to Brooklyn. And I think even the second Tenka Rav passed away just earlier this year. And I don't know much about him, but I love this idea, and my family gets to hear me say this over every single year of Parshas B'Shalach, and if I can stick it in somewhere else, I always try to. Tenka Rav explained that Hashem wasn't upset people were davening. It's that Bnei Yisrael were davening in the wrong way. They weren't davening the right type of tefillah. You see, Hashem had a plan. Hashem's plan was to actually split the Yam Suf, to create the greatest miracle that would last for generations. We were going to still sing Az Yashir many thousands of years later. And Bnei Yisrael were davening. You know what they were davening for? They were asking Hashem for Derech HaTeva things. Help us fight against our enemies. Help us find an escape route. Help us find something natural. They were davening too specifically. They chose what they thought was an option. They couldn't even imagine that Kriyas Yam Suf was on the table. And Hashem said, stop davening so specifically. You can't daven like that. Because you know what happens, Tenka Rav explained? You're putting Hashem in a terrible bind. When we daven too specifically for something, and Hashem knows it's not good for us, Hashem knows there's a better option, or whatever we're asking for is not the best approach, one of two things has to happen. Either Hashem has to say, fine, here it is, even though it's not good for us. Or Hashem says no, because it's not good for us, and we get depressed, and we feel like it's not right. In source number 5, it passes like we say in Ashrei, the Baal Shem Tov used to explain, Ritzon Yireyav Yaaseh. Sometimes Hashem gives in. When the Yireyim, when the Tzadikim ask for something, Hashem gives in. But then they realize it's horrible, and they call out to Hashem in pain. V'yeshav Asam Yishma V'yoshiyim. When they call out realizing what they asked for is not really good, they call out and they say, please save me from what I asked for. Please save me from all the good I thought I was asking for. And in source number 6, the Gemara says, a person who davened so specifically will be disappointed a lot. That was the problem with Kriyas Yam Suf. People davened to Hashem so specifically, they said, give us a certain type of Hatzalah. And Hashem said, no, don't daven like that. That's not the way to daven. And sometimes we do the same thing. This is how we daven. This is how we daven to Hashem. We're very specific in what we ask for, as if we know what's good for us, as if we know what the best approach is going to be, what the best job, what the best shidduch is for us. We daven like we know. And then we get disappointed when Hashem doesn't seem to answer. But how do we really know that what we're asking for is good for us? Amazingly, in source number 8 and source number 9, Chazal say that for Hashem, certain things are hard. You can imagine it's hard to understand why anything would be hard for Hashem. But the Gemara says that Shidduchim in source number 8 and Parnasa in source number 9 are as hard for Hashem as Kriyas Yam Suf. What does that mean? How is anything hard for Hashem? And why specifically are these things as hard as Kriyas Yam Suf? The Tenka Rav explained that Kriyas Yam Suf is hard for Hashem when we handcuff him. When we put him in a bind by asking too specifically, putting him in a position of either giving in when it hurts us or making us feel unheard. People do the same thing by Shidduchim and by Parnasa. People don't just daven, help me find the right Shidduch at the right time. They say, I'm going out this week, let it go well, let it be the right one. So what's supposed to happen then? The source number 10. A person might not be fit for this Shidduch, might not be the right option for the person. And also for Parnassa, we go on a job interview, we dive into Hashem, please help this be the one, let me get this job. But what if this job takes us away from our families? What if this job is just brutal? What if this job is not a good stepping stone to the next step of our career? We don't know. When we dive in so specifically for Shidduchim, when we dive in so specifically for Parnassa, it's as hard for Hashem as when we dive in so specifically at Kriyas Yam Suf. When Hashem said, I have a better plan for you. So maybe that's one thing that we could do better. To not daven so specifically, what I call daven generally. And many sources in section number 3 discuss this idea. Because when a person davens more generally, then whatever happens, they can believe is actually the right thing for them. Let's give an example. Instead of davening that the shidduch should go well, Daven that whatever is right should happen. Now, sometimes it means this person in front of you. Other times it means making a network of people and you setting her up with your friends or vice versa. Other times it means people are nervous and they don't have the proper skills to be dating, and maybe they have to go through a couple of dates that are not the right thing just to help them be ready when the right one comes along. And the same is true for a job. We go to a job interview, we don't know what's best for us. Maybe this job is going to be a productive interview, but not in terms of this job being right. Maybe it's a stepping stone to something else, to network. And in that sense, if we dive in more generally, we dive into Hashem, either just to say, let it be a productive experience, or to say, give me clarity. Let me walk out of the date having a clear understanding if this is the right one for me. Help me walk out of the job interview when I get a job offer to have clarity if this is the position I want to take. Not to daven for it, to daven for that person, but to daven on the topic, to be very real, but to ask for it in a way that is not handcuffing Hashem. In source number 11, the Ksav Sofer, he writes that this is why Birchos Kohanim is very general. Very often people give brachas to each other. You have a lot of money, a lot of nachas. Well, we don't know what a lot of money is good for. For most people, it's probably a good thing. But for other people, it's just, as Pirkei Avos says, marba nachasa, marba daiga. Just makes people very stressed. So what do we say in Pirkei? What do we say in Berachos Kohanim? Yevarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. Hashem should bless you. What does it mean? For some people, it means wealth. For others, it means not wealth. Hashem should bless you. Whatever is right for you. Whatever is the right fit for your life. That's the bracha. That's what we're davening for, to daven more generally. And there are a couple points in davening where we actually make this very clear. In source number 12, Baruch Sha'amar, which is a commentary on the Siddur written by the Torah Tamima in the early 1900s, he writes that when we daven Rosh Chodesh benching, which was last Shabbos, we say Hashem should be Yemale Mishalos Libeinu Letova, fulfill all of our heart's desires for the good. For the good, as opposed to what? Fulfill all our heart's desires for the good? Well, obviously, if we're asking for it, it's good for us. No. So we say to Hashem, only fulfill my heart's desires if it's Latova. I don't want it if it's not good for me. Look, I'm not going to be so arrogant to claim I know what's going on. I'm just asking for something in this area. But please, only give it to me if it's Latova. Rav Soloveitchik, which is quoted in source number 13, said the same thing about what we say at Shema Kolenu. After making all the requests in the middle section of Shmona Esrei, Shema Kolenu was the last of the requests part of Shmona Esrei. We say Hashem should be makabel berachamim uveratzon es tfiloseinu. Not just be makabel all my tfilos. Specifically be makabel our tfilos berachamim and beratzon. Only if it's good for me. If it's not good for me, don't take it. And if we dive into specifically, we run the risk of not having that opportunity. We're going to feel like either we're not answered or it's not happening. So we should dive in more specifically and then ask Hashem if whatever we're asking for is not good for us, and we shouldn't have it. At the end of Source 13, Rav Soloveitchik had a personal example of this. In the 1930s in Europe, he was davening so hard every single day that he shouldn't have to go to America, which people refer to as the Treifa Medina. America was the Treifa Medina. In the 1930s in Europe, where all the yeshivas were, that's where Torah was. America was a desert wasteland, a spiritual wasteland. No one wanted to go over there, and he davened so hard. But in the end, his tefillos were unsuccessful. He was broken. He was forced to have to emigrate, to travel to Chutz Laretz. But you know what? In the end, he was thankful. He realized he would have perished from the Nazis had he stayed in Germany. And he realized that he wouldn't have been able to accomplish his amazing role as the Rav, being Marbet Torah in America, being a major leader of modern Orthodoxy. That was his example of Mekabel Barachim Uvaratzon as tefillos in Hashem. Only take my tefillos if they're good for me. Those tefillos were not good for me, he said. I was davening so hard, so passionately. But in the end, they weren't right. In the end, they weren't right. And therefore, we have to make sure we phrase our tefillos in a way where we're asking for clarity, where we're asking, help me make the right decision. Help me see all the facts. Please help me not get tripped up or drawn in by a certain enticement. To daven, Hashem should give us whatever's good for us. In source number 14, to phrase things that if we daven that we should get whatever's good for us, then whatever happens is good for us. It's much easier to feel that our tefillos are accomplishing something if we daven generally, and then we feel that whatever we got is the best for us. So that's takeaway number one. Suggestion number one is to make sure to phrase our tefillos in a way where no matter what happens, we can really feel that Hashem is giving in whatever is best for us. Now, sometimes it's hard to take that approach. For a job interview, for Shidduchim, we can say that. But let's say, Rachmana Letzan, someone is sick, and we're davening for a Refuah Shleima. It's kind of hard to argue that we don't have a clear opinion about what is the right, what we want to come out of that. And that's fair. But the similar approach would be, we don't have full perspective. We don't know what Hashem's plan is. We don't understand, just thousands of years, millions of people, we don't understand how the Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And we're setting ourselves up for disappointment if we think that we know exactly what the right thing is to do. In such a case, maybe it is appropriate to daven specifically for refuah. But if we're not answered, if Rachmana Litzlan, the person does not get better, to again have that same approach that we don't really know how Hashem runs the world. And not to feel that our tefillos were unanswered because Hashem is not listening or because Hashem is uninterested in us, but to actually feel Hashem really has our best interest in mind, regardless of what comes out. So that's what I would call takeaway number one. But now let's get to the important question that I think is on all of our minds, and that's, well, what happens to those tefillos? Let's say a person does daven too specifically, and it's not the right thing for them, so Hashem pushes it away. Or a person davens for a refuah, and it doesn't work out that way. A person does not get better. So what happens to those tefillos? What happens to tefillos in a case where they're not successful in bringing us the thing that we think we're asking for? So one approach in source number 15 and 16 is sometimes tefillah can accomplish part. Sometimes, even if we don't get exactly what we're asking for, tefillah is successful, as in source 15 says, tefillah asasa mechza. Tefillah can accomplish part. Let's go back to our biblical examples of unanswered tefillahs. We have Moshe Rabbeinu davening to go to Eretz Yisrael, and Avraham Avinu davening Hashem should spare the people of Sodom. So in source number 16, Chazal say, Moshe's tefillahs were successful to some extent. He wasn't allowed to go in, but at least he was given the opportunity to climb up one of the mountains and be able to look at Eretz Yisrael, to get a taste, a flavor of Eretz Yisrael. It's only because of his tefillos that he accomplished that. He may have felt broken that he wasn't answered in the way that he wanted, but looking back, as I'll say, Moshe's tefillos did accomplish something. So, one approach we can take is that when tefillos are not answered, we can at least feel maybe our tefillos are accomplishing something else toward my request. But sometimes, even if it's not about this request, our tefillos can be useful completely out of context. This is a beautiful mashal in source number 17 by the Dubna Magid. I mentioned him a couple weeks ago. He was legendary for having a mashal for everything. So he gives a mashal of two people. I'll modernize it a little bit, like I like to do. Two people going shopping at the mall, and two mothers who are going shopping for clothing in a children's store. And they get there, and one mother is looking at the rack, and she's looking very carefully, looking at the style, looking at the size, really trying to make sure it's perfect. And then their mother walks in, she's just grabbing things off the racks, not checking style, not checking size, she's just piling up her cart with seemingly random clothes off the hangers. And the other mother turns to her and says, can I ask you a question? I'm spending hours over here deciding what my kid's going to like, what they're not going to like, what's going to fit, what's not going to fit them, and you're just grabbing things off the shelf. What are you doing? And the other one explained, well, let me ask you, how many children do you have? She says, I have one child. She says, well, I have 15. I have 15 children of all different ages. And you know what? I even have some grandchildren at this point. So you know what? Whatever I grab is the right size. So maybe it's not good for the kid I'm thinking of. Okay, it's a little too big. Okay, so it's good for the older brother. Okay, maybe it's a little too small. Good for the younger brother. Or maybe it's not good for anybody. Okay, it's good for the grandchildren. Maybe this one doesn't like the style. Well, it'll fit somebody else. Maybe they like the style better. How the Maggid explains this idea of tefillos that may not be the right fit for us. Sometimes we go in and we daven for something that's not right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a different plan. It's not going to be the right fit for us. But you know what? We're not only davening for ourselves. Going back to Avraham Avinu, who davened for the people of Sodom to be saved if they were worthy. And in the end, Avraham Avinu wasn't answered. But you know what? Avraham Avinu is a patriarch of an entire people. Who knows just how many of those tefillos helped us along the way? We daven for schus avos every single day. Who knows how many of those schus avos come from those unanswered, quote-unquote, unanswered tefillos that Avram davened? Hashem said, okay, so it's not the right fit for this person. Maybe it is for somebody else. Not throwing them out. Our tefillos are never thrown out. If they're not right for us in this circumstance, maybe they're right for us in a different context. If they're not right for us, maybe they're right for our kids or our grandkids or our cousin or our nephew. We don't know. We don't know. But never to feel that tefillos are not being answered. If a person davens a sincere tefillah, and a tefillah which does have power, even if it's not going to be used in this particular context, there's always another kid. There's always somebody else in the family who can benefit. And it's beneficial for us to be able to pile up, to stockpile a whole vault full of tefillos. In source number 18, Rav Pinkus puts this very beautifully. He says, sometimes there are people in our lives that we have to daven for, and we don't even realize. A very practical case could be someone is in New York, and because of the time difference, they don't realize that someone in Eretz Yisrael is having surgery. Maybe the person in New York is sleeping. Before they even wake up, there's someone in Eretz Yisrael who needs their tefillos. But the person in New York doesn't know. They can't daven. So in that case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes to our bank. He goes to our tefillah bank. He goes to our repository of tefillos that we've built up over the years and takes one out. It's very good to have tefillos on hand. Very good to have a stockpile of tefillos. We never know when we're going to use it, when someone else is going to need it, We never know who it's the right fit for. And therefore, my second takeaway, aside from the first one about making sure our tefillos are phrased in a way that doesn't handcuff Hashem, number two is, why isn't Hashem answering my tefillos? He is, but maybe not just in the exact way that you're asking for it. Maybe it accomplishes half, or maybe it accomplishes something else for you or someone else you care about in a different context. Hashem is answering your tefillos, just maybe not in the exact way you thought about. Now, at this point, you don't have to be a cynic to ask the question of, well, then this is kind of a cop-out. So then whenever I daven a tefillah, it could be completely unanswered. I see no change whatsoever. My life doesn't get better. Whatever I'm asking for doesn't improve. But I'm still supposed to feel that I'm accomplishing something. And you'll tell me, well, maybe you davened wrong. Or maybe it's going to work for you somewhere else. But how can I verify that? How can I verify that? Anytime I feel disappointed, my tefillah doesn't seem to be working, is the approach just to say, well, it'll work somewhere, which we can't confirm when, where, or ever. So without invalidating those approaches, because they really are important, we have to understand what I put in the last section is the real reason for tefillah. And this is so important. The real reason for tefillah is not a wish list. We're not sitting lahavdil. We're not sitting on Santa's lap asking him for a whole list of things. We're not just sitting there asking, and then walking away, never to talk to him ever again. It's a different Santa each year, I think. No, tefillah is much more than that. Tefillah is about a relationship, as we've been explaining for the last few weeks. Tefillah is much more than that. In source number 19, the Mabit, in the 1500s, was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo. He asked the question I asked earlier. How can we just keep davening? Hashem seems to say no. The tefillahs are an answer, and we keep davening and davening again and again and again. Isn't that a chutzpah? Why do we keep davening again if it's not working? And in source number 19, in the second paragraph, he explains, that's not the point of tefillah. Don't get me wrong, tefillah is a major way to accomplish, to achieve the things that we need. But that's not the goal of tefillah. And if we don't get it, tefillah is unsuccessful. We might feel tefillah is a failure because we don't understand what the goal of tefillah is. If we don't understand what something is supposed to do, well then we might be disappointed if we don't think that it's accomplishing its goal. But what if we have it wrong? Tefillah is more about, as he writes, as we've spoken about the last 5 weeks, tefillah is about us recognizing where things come from. Us having a relationship with the Borei Olam, us having a connection, the humility to realize that we're not self-sufficient, that we need a Kadosh Baruch Hu in our lives, and how precious it is, how lucky we are to have a relationship with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if we daven and we internalize this, and we build that relationship, then even if we're not answered, the tefillah is not unsuccessful, it's not unanswered, because the goal of tefillah is to build a relationship, and that's being accomplished no matter what. At the end, he writes in Source 19, Hashem will either decide yes or no if it's fit for you to get what you're asking for or not. But either way, the goal is accomplished. Rav Pinkus, again, in source number 20, spells it out beautifully. He writes that the actual asking itself is more important than what we're asking for. Just that we're asking, that we turn to Hashem, that we have a relationship with Him, that we have the ability to talk to Him and to have a relationship, that is the most important thing. He continues at the end of Source 20, he writes that when a person asks someone else for money, so what they really want to do, both the giver and the receiver, is to never have it happen ever again. I'm hoping you can grant my request this one time, and if all goes well, I'll never need you again. Is that what tefillah is? No way. Is tefillah about asking for things that we should be self-sufficient and never have to talk to Hashem ever again? Not a chance. Tefillah is specifically about having a relationship, to continue to realize that we need Hashem. And even without accomplishing the things that we need, if we don't really see that we're getting them, it doesn't mean that tefillah is a failure. It doesn't mean that the tefillah was unanswered, because what's trying to be created is a relationship. In the past, one of the previous weeks, we asked if it's a chutzpah to daven to Hashem only when we need something. And we said, no, Kadosh Baruch Hu is reaching out to you. But it might be a chutzpah to stop davening when we get something, or to stop davening when we realize that we're not getting it, or we no longer need it. That would be a chutzpah. Turning to Hashem in a moment of need just shows we're paying attention to our needs. But once that happens, once we have the dialogue and we've woken up, why should we shut it down just because we got it, or because we no longer need it, or because it doesn't seem to be working? The real etzem of tefillah, the fact that we're asking, is more important than what we're actually asking for and whether we actually get it. I want to conclude with a story that I heard from my friend, Rabbi Kevin Perlich, who gave a shiur on this topic. In October of 1994, Nachshon Waxman was a 19-year-old Israeli soldier who was captured by the Hamas terrorists. And for nearly a week, Klal Yisrael was davening. people from different part of the spectrum were getting together to daven, to beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have him return safely. Very unfortunately, at the end of about 6 days, the special ops unit went in to try to rescue him, and the mission was unsuccessful. The terrorists had murdered Nachshon Waxman, Hashem Yikom Damo. At the funeral, the Rosh Yeshiva of Nachshon got up, and he shared a message with all the listeners, a message he conveyed from the father of Nachshon Waxman. Can you imagine the person who just lost his son after davening, having all of Klal Yisrael daven for your child? And the amazing emunah that he showed. Nachshon's father told the maspid, the person giving the hespid, to say the following. People have been asking me, the father said, what happened to all those tefillos? We davened so hard. How could Hashem not answer any of our tefillos? And he said, I want you to know something. Hashem did not ignore our tefillos. Those tefillos weren't unanswered. It's just that sometimes Hashem answers no. Sometimes Hashem answers no. But he is answering. When my parents told me no 10 years ago, I didn't feel that the connection was severed. Sometimes the answer is no. But it doesn't mean the relationship's not there. It doesn't mean that there's no longer a connection. It doesn't make the request a waste. It doesn't take away from the fact that we accomplished the right to turn to Hashem. We've found the correct approach to turn to Hashem in a time of need. That's not lost. When Klal Yisrael gets together and davens to Hashem, that's a win. It's very unfortunate that in this particular circumstance, the request was unanswered. But that's not ignoring tefillos, not an unanswered tefillah. Sometimes the answer is just no. So putting it all together right now, we started off by asking the question of why isn't Hashem answering my tefillos? And what are we supposed to feel when a tefillah is not being answered? So we started off by noting that maybe we're doing something wrong. Maybe we're not asking in the right way. Maybe we're requesting things that are not good for us. And perhaps one practical takeaway would be to daven more generally, to acknowledge we can't see the full picture, and that we don't really know what the right thing is for us. So to ask more generally and to really feel whatever is happening, is Hashem doing what's best for us? And secondly, we said, even if it feels that there's no tangible benefit right now, maybe feel accomplished something you don't know about. Maybe for you right now on this matter, maybe for a different matter, maybe in the future, you never know. Tefillah is always there. Tefillahs are never wasted. They're always valuable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And lastly, to say that Hashem sometimes says no, but it doesn't take away from the relationship tefillah builds. It doesn't take away from the fact that we have this connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fact that Hashem says yes and no means it's a real relationship. Again, maybe because it's not best for us, maybe it's not the right thing. We don't have the full perspective that he has. But just knowing that he's saying no is so much more comforting than thinking he's not listening. Knowing that he is answering and he is developing that relationship with us, and we are taking the active step to create one with him, that makes tefillah a win, regardless of what the outcome is. Even if tefillahs are not answered, maybe at all from our perspective, still, that relationship created is itself a tremendous bracha that we have in our lives. And hopefully with this perspective, we'll be able to get a chizuk, to be able to keep davening when we don't feel like our tefillahs are being answered, to keep realizing that relationship is there no matter what, and to daven in a way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be able to mekabel our tefillahs berachamim, as their best for us. Just want to end off by saying that because this is so important to have this relationship with Hashem, it'd be wonderful if we can expand this and not limit it to just one time, twice, three times a day. Please join us next week as we expand to the topic of davening to Hashem outside of tefillah, perhaps having this relationship with Hashem throughout our entire day.